Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage? Looking for a reputable, fully licensed, insured, and certified contractor? Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. When a disaster strikes in your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. With over 62 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, and Eric and their team is prepared to handle any size disaster. The guys are born and raised in South Florida, so changing the narrative on the way contractors conduct business in South Florida is extremely important to them. Their objective is to make cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed building contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. There's no need to bring in other contractors. They will handle it all for you. Call or text them anytime at 561-408-7835 for immediate assistance. The number again, 561-408-7835. Water Cleanup of Florida. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today. Sports betting season is in full force. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost 3 decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com. They have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. And you will receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code 5. That's the word 5, F-I-V-E. They also have re-up and referral bonuses as well. Follow my lead and open an account with BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. This show is brought to you by Lewis Peters State Farm, agency representing the number one auto and home insurer in the United States for more than 60 years combined experience in the insurance industry. Local agents that understand South Florida's unique market, you have access to them 24/7, walk-in, call-in, click-in through lewispeters.com. You can find them online on social media at SF Agent Peters, or you can call at 305-275-5585. Remember, lewispeters.com.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga, and you asked for it. You've been asking for it on my Twitter account, on the 3 Yards Per Carry Twitter account, and we've made it possible. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. We're all together. The band is back together again. Everybody keeps asking, why don't you guys just, you know, do all your podcasts together? Well, you know, we don't want, you know, we don't mind abusing Simon, but, you know, there's just so many times we could have him get up in the middle of the night to do a podcast with us, right? Right, Simon?
Right, exactly.
But in a, I hear that in a surprise move next Monday, I'm going to be dismissed for being an asshole to everybody.
Really? Which brings us to, and before, of course, which will bring us to Brian Flores.
This podcast, there, Chris. I thought you were being serious.
This podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Use the promo code 5RSN, 20% off your entire order. Why you wouldn't use the promo code, I don't know. 5RSN, 20% off.
Imagine having a promo code but not using it.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
That's like going into a supermarket and on the left-hand side shelf, it just says everything's free and people ignoring it and going and buying exactly the same thing but actually paying for it.
Yeah, like people, we get information like, you know, directly from the sponsors, and many a times people have clicked on the link that I have provided and not used our promo code. How that happens, I do not understand. Anyways, the national media is in an uproar. We evidently fired Vince Lombardi. Simon, your thoughts on the dismissal? We're going to be brief on this. We're going to get into all the candidates. But first, we'll touch on Brian Flores. Your reaction to the dismissal and I guess your overall thoughts, although we did cover it before.
Yeah, I mean, nothing to add from what I said the other day, really. And there's always going to be a sort of he said, she said that comes out in the media. So nothing changes. It was expected. You've seen people saying, oh, you know, the Dolphins should look at this really interesting head coaching candidate, Brian Flores. Well, you know, it didn't work out for whatever reason. I'm sure some of that will come out in the wash, and I'm sure Flo will go on to be a head coach somewhere else, and we'll just see how it plays out and whether some of the things that we've heard, whether they matriculate a little bit further out, both from former players, but also from, you know, whatever new team he ends up at. But as far as the national media goes, you know, I don't really care. You know, the national media said, you know, the Dolphins were lucky to win 8 out of the last 9 and they didn't play anybody. And then we sat Brian Flores and all of a sudden it's like, you know, he's the guy that got you 8 out of 9. He's the guy that took you, you know, you can't win either way. So frankly, I don't care. I mean, I genuinely don't give a shit.
Yeah. Chris, your thoughts on the dismissal and the reaction thereof of Brian Flores? Like we have a like certain, I don't know if you saw Josh Gad's post and his subsequent.
Oh God. Yeah.
His subsequent. Well,
when you appearance. Lose Olaf. When you lose Olaf.
Yeah, his appearance. Oh, my God. It was heartbreaking. His appearance on. Forgive me. I don't remember the guy's name. But Adam
Shine. Adam Shine.
There he is. Bam. Adam Shine's show. His appearance was. It was heartbreaking. It's. Fold the franchise. Move him to London. I'm sure Simon will be happy. Or not.
Well, if Chris, they bring out, if they bring everybody, if they bring the owner and everybody in the front office, then Simon won't be happy. now, I think that, you know, it's hard to know unless you were there. And you know, I don't want to cast aspersions on Brian Flores as a person or as a coach, you know, without really having knowledge of it. But it seems how it's being painted by people within the Dolphins is that, you know, there was a lot of uneven treatment between the defensive players and the offensive players. And therefore no surprise that the defense players are all, you know, speaking up and quite vocal and in uproar about Brian Flores being dismissed. Whereas most of the offensive players are either quiet or, you know, in Devontae Parker's case, quite loudly applauding the move. You know, so I think that there's uneven treatment. He's being accused of uneven treatment between offensive and defensive players. He's being accused of straddling poorly the line between hard ass and asshole. And I think that, you know, that's, yeah. And that's the, because if you think about it, Tua Tagovailoa was under Nick Saban 3 years, and you know, that is the ultimate hard ass, right? So and there are several other players on the Dolphins that were at Alabama under Saban. So I think that if he did not do that successfully, well, then that could be why. If the relationship between he and Chris Greer deteriorated, as I'm being told, or as we hear, like to where they didn't even speak for the last 3 weeks or something like that, then that is a problem. You do have to decide. You do have to decide one or the other or neither. You know, at that point, it's just one of those things. Dolphins chose one over the other instead of neither. So I think that the thing that concerns me the most, right, actually is what's coming out, because the stuff that's sort of corroborated by what we already knew. I mean, we already saw a guy like Minka Fitzpatrick, who was in college, you know, the teacher's pet. And then in the pros, again, under the ultimate hard ass, Nick Saban adored him, like loved him. Comes to Miami under Brian Flores, and he is like, no, you know, absolutely not. I'm not playing, you know, another, I'm not playing another game
Stephen
under
Ross,
this asshole.
You know, not to rehash this because we covered this on the podcast. Stephen Ross got on a plane from New York to Miami to salvage the relationship, showed up to sit down with Minka Fitzpatrick, and Minka Fitzpatrick told him, I appreciate you coming, but I can't play for this man.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's one thing. And we have really, you know, denigrated Minka Fitzpatrick for that. And he deserves to be.
Alf has.
Or Alf has. But no, I think he deserves to be. When you pull something like that as a player, especially I was really disappointed to hear what Minka did in the practices that, you know, in order to basically instigate the move or bolster his case. But yeah, so when you have a situation like that, that really gets shit on both people's shoes, you know, and that's an instance. You got a guy like Kyle Van Noy who walked in as Brian Flores' friend, you know, supposedly
barbecues and ball games,
barbecues and ball games type friend, walked out. Like with major beef with Brian Flores, you know, that's happened too many times actually too, because like Chad O'Shea walked in as Brian Flores's friend. He uprooted his entire family to come down to Miami, and it was a big deal for them to do that. And he followed Flores down to Miami, and then he got here and was dismissed quickly after a year. And I think that, you know, George Godsey, if you were to talk to him without anybody else there or without anything being recorded, I think he would have some interesting things to say. And he walked into Miami himself as a friend of Brian Flores too. I mean, he said in his first press conference that they used to talk on the phone every day. And so, you know, Josh McDaniels, when he went to Denver and became the head coach, it was like, people there said that he became somebody other than Josh McDaniels. Like he like became this, almost this cartoon image of what he thinks that he should be as the head coach. And you wonder if Brian Flores made a similar mistake in Miami, and he just basically picked fights with everybody, including members of the media and, you know, members of the media staff, you know, from the team, just basically everybody up and down on the staff and the coaching staff and, you know, the players and so on and so forth. And eventually the Dolphins were just like, you know, I think Ross came to believe we have a strong roster. We can survive this. But you know, this sort of enemy making from the head coach, you know, within is never going to win us the championship. So that's why he did it. But it doesn't mean it was the right call. It doesn't mean it was the right decision.
Well, I don't think it was the right call, but I wasn't in the building.
Yeah. I mean, we're
not
in the building.
I'm not qualified to say if it was or not.
It doesn't mean it was the right call. It's just that this is what they're saying. And this is the mistake that they think Brian Flores was making. It doesn't even mean that he'll make that mistake at his future stop. He might learn from this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's sort of like I tell people, Nick Saban is both one of the most legendary football coaches I've ever witnessed, and the guy who was a bad coach in Miami. Like he's actually both of those, you know, and sometimes there are discrete decisions that you can make, you know, at key turning moments or key moments. And
Nick Saban fired, this story was rehashed the other day on the radio. Nick Saban fired a secretary that was there in Davie for 22 years for quote unquote getting too personal. You know how she got personal?
Yeah. She asked him about his haircut.
Yes.
I mean, so, I mean, he is both a legendary coach and the guy who was actually legitimately not good in Miami.
Like not a good person.
No, not even just not a good person, but not necessarily even a good coach. He didn't get results. He made some poor decisions, some key decisions that were poor. You
he
know,
was
that,
dumbfounded that, by the red challenge flag. Like that thing was like alien to him. Like he didn't understand.
He made some poor decisions that hurt not only his tenure in Miami, but future, you know, the Miami's future. And he just, you know, sometimes even good players miss, you know, and I think that Nick Saban was both a legendary great coach and a guy who was a bad coach in Miami. And it might have been irrecoverable, quite frankly, by the end. And so I think that what Miami would be saying in this case is Flores could be a good coach, but by the end, he destroyed so many relationships. This was irrecoverable.
All right. And we'll never get to the bottom of what happened to Dave Guglielmo, who was here for 2 weeks.
Or what's his name? Flaherty, Pat Flaherty. He was here for training camp. What happened there?
Yeah, what was that? I remember I spoke to Dave Guglielmo and he spoke at length of every single guy, including Michael Dieter, who he was a fan of at the time, who was a second year player.
And that's probably why he wasn't here for.
Yeah, that's probably why he was sat there.
And two days later, Matt Taylor came down and said, Dave Guglielmo is no longer here. He has resigned. he's no longer the offensive line coach.
What happened with Caldwell?
Yeah,
you know, there were health issues, but he could have stuck.
Yeah, Jim Caldwell has since put out that he no longer has health issues. He's older, yeah. but he no longer has health issues, yeah. He's ready to take control of a team. So it's just been weird. It's been a weird ride. But I will say this to wrap this all up. You can't be surprised that you have a power-hungry maniac at head coach if you gave him the power to fire your PR staff, Mr. Greer. Okay? So I think this falls right back to Chris Greer. You can't all of a sudden complain, there's gambling in this casino? Like, you know, you can't do that. All right. You ceded power for 3 years and then you're complaining at the end and it leads to a firing because your relationship is essentially in the toilet. But enough about Brian Flores. We got candidates coming in. Some interviews. I guess Simon will enlighten us.
So three defensive, Leslie Frazier, currently defensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. Vance Joseph, currently defensive coordinator of the Arizona Cardinals, obviously was DC in Miami with Adam Gase. And Dan Quinn, former head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, now DC of the Dallas Cowboys, who's kind of revolutionized that Cowboy defense. And then three offensive coaches, Brian Daboll, currently offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. Mike McDaniel, who is the offensive play designer and de facto offensive coordinator, although he doesn't call plays in San Francisco, and Kellen Moore, the former Boise State left-handed quarterback, who is the Dallas Cowboys offensive coordinator.
And how do we feel about this list right off the bat?
You want to go one by one or do you want to, you know?
Yeah, let's go one by one. Let's go with the most experienced, Dan Quinn. My reservations on Dan Quinn were, you know, were the defensive systems he's run in the past mesh with what we have right now as far as talent? And if you watch his Dallas Cowboys defense, he's completely changed some of his philosophies and some of his ideas. He's gone more to a system that's similar to what we run here in Dallas because of the personnel. That's a very, very good sign. I don't know your thoughts, Simon.
Yeah, I'm a big I like Dan Quinn. I was going to say I'm a big fan. I like him. I like what he did in Atlanta. Obviously took the Falcons to the Super Bowl. It was very difficult post-Super Bowl. I don't think anybody really recovers from being 28-3 up at the end of the third quarter, or pretty much the end of the third quarter, and losing a Super Bowl. How you come back from that is difficult. Obviously, Kyle Shanahan then left. They went 10-6 the following season, but after that, things did start to slip away, but I just don't think that franchise ever recovered. And I don't think you can with the same personnel and the kind of the same hangover that just, you know, all the same people all around you the whole time. What he's done in Dallas, I think, is extremely impressive. He's essentially changed the system completely, revolutionized his system. And you're seeing the effects. You know, you could talk about Micah Parsons was a great player anyway, you know, coming out of Penn State, but you know, he needs to be coached and Quinn has maximized his ability, both as an off-ball linebacker, as a blitzing linebacker, but also as a pure pass rusher. Randy Gregory has obviously had a lot of talent, but that talent has been honed now spectacularly. The defensive tackles play really well. There's not been injuries to Leighton Van Der Esch. I know he doesn't control injuries, but what it means is that he's flexing Van Der Esch in and out of the lineup. Trayvon Diggs obviously has had a spectacular year. The kid from Michigan, Jordan Lewis, has played really well. And I just think schematically, he's just really flipped his scheme upside down and worked with the talent that he has. I find him a very interesting candidate. I suspect he would probably try and bring Aidan Durd, who I know pretty well from over here. He's a Londoner, played football over here, I think with the London Olympians, and was part of the international. So they run a coaching scheme similar to the international player development scheme. Durd latched on with Quinn with the Falcons and was so impressive that he then came. He's now defensive line coach with the Cowboys. He's considered very much a rising star in coaching circles. So yeah, Dan Quinn, I think he's a very interesting candidate. And offensively, Charlie Weiss Jr., who's the son of Charlie Weiss, now offensive coordinator at Ole Miss under Lane Kiffin. He worked very closely with Dan Quinn for a number of years in Atlanta. Wouldn't surprise me if he went back to, especially with Matt Corral leaving Ole Miss, wouldn't surprise me if he went back to the well there and perhaps brought him in as his OC. So yeah, Dan Quinn, I think for me, is the number one retread out there.
Yeah, and I will say something. You mentioned some players. Anthony Brown was on his way out of the league. Complete resurrection this year. And one of the better players on that defense. So yeah, Dan Quinn does deserve a lot of credit for that turnaround in Dallas. Chris, your thoughts?
The thing that stands out to me about Dan Quinn is, first off, like, he was here in Miami. That may be a big deal. You know, so we have a GM in place. Say what you want about that decision, but you know, Dan Quinn was here. I think it was who was it? Not Jeff Ireland, but the
Randy Mueller.
Randy Mueller. He pointed out in that Dan Quinn, was he talking about Dan Quinn or Brian Daboll? I forget, but either one, both of them had been here. I mean, notice the theme, actually. You know, we're talking about Dan Quinn, who was here in Miami with Chris Greer. We're talking about Brian Daboll, who was here in Miami at the same time Chris Greer was. And we're talking about Vance Joseph, who was here in Miami at the same time Chris Greer was. So we've got a little bit of a theme going there. The thing that stands out to me about Quinn is his staffs that he put together in Atlanta. And I think that was really impressive. I mean, he originally had Kyle Shanahan and that entire crew, including Matt LaFleur and Mike LaFleur and Mike McDaniel, like all on staff under Kyle Shanahan on the offensive side, and Terry Rubisky, you know, he's a respected name out there as a, and on the defensive side, he's been associated with guys like Richard Smith and Marquand Manuel and, you know, Jeff Ulbrich and stuff like that. So, I think that you're looking for a guy that can put together. See, I don't think we would question whether he could put together a defensive staff, but when you look at the fact that he was able to get that entire Shanahan crew, with him in Atlanta and then replace him with Steve Sarkisian, you know, when Shanahan left, I mean, that's pretty good. So I think that, maybe it started to falter a little bit under Dirk Cutter, but, you know, when he brought Dirk Cutter along, but, and, you know, I think that, he can put together a staff. You look at the guys that he's coaching with in Dallas. I mean, Mike McDaniel has coached under him. So would it terribly surprise me if Dan Quinn were the head coach of Miami? You know, does he dangle the job to Mike McDaniel to say, hey, you're basically the head coach of the offense, you know, just like Kyle Shanahan was under him in Atlanta, you know? Does that work for Mike McDaniel? Does it work for Kellen Moore? I don't know, you know. So who knows? So I think that he's a really good candidate. He might even be, you know, kind of the top candidate. I know he's a very in-demand candidate though too. So, you know, Miami would have to, he might have multiple offers on the table, to be honest.
All right. Moving on, Simon. Vance Joseph, I'll bring up Vance Joseph for a second. There was a time where Stephen Ross had, I guess, bragged to certain people, I got two head coaches on staff. Problem was that the other one was Adam Gase. Okay. But he was very fond of Vance Joseph and was kind of upset when he lost him after a year. He was getting paid a ton of money here to be the DC. Your thoughts on Vance Joseph, and does he have any shot, or is this just a Rooney Rule?
I think he has a shot because he's well known and probably well liked within the organization. To me personally, I think that he is probably best suited as a coordinator. But, you know, there are people that say he's Brian Flores with better people skills, you know. So it depends for me on the staff that he could put together, you know, as a Bill Musgrave, for example, somebody that he could bring in as offensive coordinator. It's, you know, schematically, you look at what Arizona are doing, and you look at what they do with somebody like Buda Baker and how that would match up with what Javon Holland does, for example. So schematically, I think there are similarities. I think he's an interesting candidate. I just am not sold that he's the best candidate. Just something about him as as a lead dog, kind of. Do you know what I mean? There's just something that maybe, you know, I wouldn't be completely averse. My mum's FaceTiming me. Thanks, mum. Decline. I would not be averse to him, but I think there are better retread candidates. I think that's probably the best way of putting it.
Thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, I don't have too many thoughts on him other than what I will say is that his being on the list, I look at the list and I see some, you know, I see some themes, right? I see guys that everybody are going after, right? You know, so I see groupthink guys on the list. I also see guys that the Dolphins have previous experience with. This is almost like, you know, I just named them. You know, these guys worked with the Dolphins before, or in Mike McDaniel's case, he interviewed with the Dolphins for the OC position, which Simon very eloquently pointed out on Twitter the other day. You know, and so they thought highly of him. When I see that, I'm almost kind of, you know, I still get this feeling that Miami is caught flat-footed in this search. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of, you know, it was at one point put to me by somebody that they might not even request any interviews this week. That Steve Ross might just want to see how things are shaking out. And it's just like, I think they're caught a little bit flat-footed. And if you look at the candidates or the guys that are requesting interviews from, they're either somebody that everybody's requesting an interview from, and so they're obvious, or they're guys that they have some sort of experience with. So they're just going with very familiar wells, I guess, to get these candidates, including Vance Joseph. And I kind of wonder about that. So I'm really still interested in seeing how this process shakes out, but it's ultimately going to be about the interviews. And if Vance Joseph is the guy that impresses them the most, then so be it.
All right, Simon, moving on.
Yeah, so Leslie Frazier, obviously well known, has been around the league for a long time, former, another retread really in terms of head coaching. He has been a head coach before, now obviously Bill's defensive coordinator. And again, you look at schematically, they do lots of things that are fairly similar. And again, sort of starts with the safeties. You look at Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, two of the best safeties, certainly arguably the best safety combo in the league, probably alongside Darnell Savage and Adrian Amos. And I think, yeah, he's an interesting name. He's a good coach. He's a really well-respected veteran NFL coach. Whether he's the right guy remains to be seen. I mean, I think it's interesting that they're interviewing both of the coordinators in Buffalo, you know, almost to weaken a division opponent as much as anything. You got like the fact that given what we do in terms of takeaways and scoring, the Bills are the best scoring defense in the NFL this season. You know, and we've got a, you know, active, you know, we got yak guys on the defensive side of the ball, you know, whether that's Van Ginkle or X scored twice this season, Eguavan with the end zone pick six. There are, you know, playmakers on defense who can score. And it's very much a sort of a takeaway, thriving takeaway scoring defense. So, I'm intrigued by Leslie Frazier. But again, I wonder, is he just a fantastic coordinator who perhaps isn't necessarily, I think the defensive guys will like him. I wouldn't be averse, but he's not top of my list.
Yeah, and Bill's defense this year was absolutely overwhelming And when I mean overwhelming, it's their metrics, their numbers are just so much better than the rest of the leagues. It's not even funny. I can't wait for that matchup against Kansas City. Chris, your thoughts on Frazier before we move on to Daboll?
I mean, the one thing that you can say is going 10-6 with Christian Ponder in Minnesota is pretty impressive. That's one thing. His two other seasons, I mean, he took over his interim just for his history. He took over, he was the assistant head coach and defensive coordinator under Brad Childress in Minnesota for a while. And then when Childress was dismissed, he took over as the interim guy. And then, you know, won the round of interviews to be the permanent guy. And so, you know, at the time they're messing around with quarterbacks like Christian Ponder and I believe Matt Cassel. And, you know, obviously that didn't work. I think that he would probably have to, as a defensive guy, and you become a head coach as a defensive guy, you get fired for your strengths, not your, you know, and that's, you wonder what happened to his defense in 2011 and 2013 when he got dismissed by the Minnesota Vikings. Did they just, you know, was it just a problem or a talent problem at that point? Did they just not have anybody left in the hopper from a talent standpoint? Who knows? But yeah, so I think that he could be a strong candidate. But again, I go back to these very easy themes that the Dolphins are going for of, you know, either the guys that everybody likes, the guys that we have experience with, or the guys that'll weaken our biggest competitor. You know, that's okay. So I wonder about the thought that's going into this.
Now, Brian Daboll, Simon, you know, it's hard to get your hands around this because the Dolphin fan is going to say, well, we watch Buffalo play and they refuse to run the football. How does that fit with what we got to do going forward? But it's a little bit deeper than that. Your thoughts on Brian Daboll?
A good coach. Again, you look at weakening an opponent, a division opponent. Would he bring Ken Dorsey with him to be his OC? Obviously, Dorsey works under him in Buffalo. Incredibly creative. Doesn't have the best running backs, but has a very good running game. But you throw Josh Allen, obviously, into that mix with his 750-ish yards rushing. Kind of has gone off the boil a little bit in the past, I suppose, second half of the season, in terms of people talking about him as a, you know, the kind of the de facto guru of offensive line, of offensive play callers. But, you know, you want to prioritize the current quarterback, then Brian Daboll's probably the man. You know, played with Tua during his freshman year, or coached Tua, was the offensive coordinator during his freshman year at Alabama. And that's, you know, that obviously works for something. You know, there is talk of Brian Daboll getting the job in Chicago, working with Justin Fields. But really, I think what the key thing is getting good players around Tua. And I think that's arguably more important than the scheme that they'll run. But clearly, Brian Daboll, an RPO coach who understands that form of offense, would be very intriguing for Tua. So I suppose it depends. You know, you almost look at it in two ways. Do you want, you're entering a critical year for the quarterback. Do you want somebody who's going to build around that quarterback and build a scheme so specific to him to make it work? But also knowing that, look, if it doesn't work out, 2023, you've got CJ Stroud and Bryce Young and Will Levis and Grayson McCool coming out. You've got two first round picks. You know, do you want to completely hang the farm on somebody that potentially might not still be here in 12 months' time? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think anybody does. But I think Daboll is a very interesting name. Obviously, he has been here before. I probably didn't leave with huge love when he finished his time in Miami. But in terms of what he brings to the table for the quarterback, I think it's very intriguing.
Chris, Brian Daboll.
You know, that's if I were to make a list, you know, of who's most likely, it does seem like Daboll would be on top of it. And I think Vegas shares that opinion. I mean, yeah, think about it.
Current favorite in three houses. current
favorite. That's not only the Tua Tagovailoa connection, the weakening the division opponent. He's been on people's lists for kind of a couple of years, really. I think he's got an impressive resume. He was impressive as an offensive coordinator when he was here in Miami. He didn't have great guys to work with, but he clearly
maximized them. He had Brandon Marshall, he had Reggie Bush, career years for both guys.
And you know, with Matt Moore throwing the ball primarily and Chad Henne as well. And I think that we had sort of these outdated offenses prior to that, and Tony Sperano had the light come on and decide that he really needs to do things differently. And hiring Brian Daboll was the doing things differently. And I think it was legitimate. And I think that he's been legitimate at several stops when you look at it. I get really itchy when I go in with a guy that's just attached to a great quarterback. Right. Because how many times does that actually just work? How many times does it work? Period. You know, I'm curious about that.
He does know where our bodies are buried, because he seems to own our defense, right? So,
well, right, but I mean, like, you know, how many times you go with, okay, we're just gonna hire whoever happens to be Aaron Rodgers' coordinator this year, you know, or something like that, or Peyton Manning's coordinator, or you know, how many times does that really work? So I get a little bit itchy about the Josh Allen thing, but it deserves to be said that Josh Allen was a seriously flawed. I liked him anyway, but I mean, he was a seriously flawed prospect when he came out, and he was seriously flawed, you know, his first year, and the amount of improvement that he made has been pretty impressive. And between the two of them, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Josh Allen who regresses more without Brian Daboll than Brian Daboll regresses with, you know, without Josh Allen. So
Josh Allen is so good that people are talking about him regressing this year. And he regressed to the tune of 42 total touchdowns. You heard that right. 42.
He's crazy. But but I mean, just in terms of it's not just that. It's not just Tua Tagovailoa. It's not just the impressive resume. He's worked with Chris Greer in Miami. He's worked with Marvin Allen in Buffalo. You know, I think there are connections there, and it would weaken the division opponent. So there's a lot there that makes him the kind of the clubhouse favorite, I would think. But then you just got to see how he interviews, because maybe he's just not that impressive as a leader of men or something. We don't have any, you know, we don't have experience with the guy, so we don't know, but you never know. We'll see.
All right. Now that brings us to, I guess, the fan favorite. I've done a couple of polls on 3 yards per carry, and it's gotten almost 4,000 votes. This guy seems to keep edging out Brian Daboll, Mike McDaniel. Simon,
yeah.
Your thoughts on Mike McDaniel overall? I'll give my own when we're done here, but your thoughts, Mike McDaniel,
yeah.
Offensive coordinator of the 49ers.
He is my number one choice. He is kind of Napoleon Dynamite. He looks like he has spent a lot of time growing weed.
I hate to interrupt you, but some people have told me, he will never go to a state where marijuana is not legal. It's very easy to get a marijuana card allegedly in the state of Florida. Allegedly.
Yeah, he looks like an expert. Essentially, he sounds like an expert at sort of microwaving frozen burritos. But he is an offensive genius, and people say, oh, Adam Gase was a genius, or Joe Philbin. Everybody said that about. I have a friend who's a 49ers aficionado fan, just like we are the Dolphins, and he is exceedingly unhappy that McDaniel might be leaving. Obviously, he turned down an offensive coordinator interview with us a year ago. Why is he a genius? People have been asking me on social media. So essentially, in 2004, he interned with Mike Shanahan. And Shanahan was so impressed that he got him to design plays. He was so impressed with his play designs that he got McDaniel to essentially take on the Shanahan system and try and evolve it for the modern game, which he then did. He was so successful at doing that John Gruden hired him solely to design plays for John Gruden, one of the best offensive minds of a generation. He has essentially been with the Shanahans throughout. We mentioned him earlier on as part of Dan Quinn's team, along with Matt LaFleur and and people like that, Mike LaFleur in Atlanta, and then went to the San Francisco, followed Kyle Shanahan there, was the passing game coordinator, and has then moved up to offensive coordinator. So he does not call plays on game day, but what he does is design the game plan, the offensive game plan, and design the plays which are going to be called by Kyle Shanahan. So the only thing he doesn't do is actually say, this is the play, this is the play, this is the play. But he knows all the plays because he's put them in the game plan and he's had a huge hand in designing said plays. He's also part of the, him and Shanahan are talking the entire time on headphones about what plays to run during a drive and then post a drive when the offense comes off the field. McDaniel is then preparing plays and preparing a play sheet for the next 49ers offensive drive. He is so well liked by his offensive players that George Kittle, when he went to sign his contract, asked specifically to John Lynch if it could be written into his new contract that Mike McDaniel wasn't allowed to go anywhere during the tenure of Kittle's contract. That's how highly regarded, and that's not even a joke, that's how highly regarded McDaniel is. He's young. Like I said, he looks like he's come from MIT and probably manufactured a number of bongs his next career
best,
at MIT.
Next best thing, Simon, he's a Yale graduate.
He is a Yale graduate, yeah. He looks like he went to MIT and was kind of helped develop Facebook with Mark Zuckerberg or Face Smash or whatever it was called originally. You'd half expect him to tip up on the Facebook film for a few years ago with Justin Timberlake in. He's that kind of character. But he is an offensive mastermind. Now, whether or not he has the ability to walk into a room of veteran NFL players and take over that room is very interesting to me. And I'm not sure, I don't know the answer to that. I think his hires as offensive and defensive coordinator would be very, very important. One name that was floated, and I think it was absolutely right. One name was James Betcher, who was the defensive coordinator of the Arizona Cardinals, who is now a special assistant to the defense in San Francisco, working with D'Amico Ryans there. I find him very interesting. I think he's a very, very switched on, interesting candidate. And I know that the Dolphins were very disappointed last year that he didn't interview for the offensive coordinator position. So yeah, I think he's just a very intriguing prospect. Obviously, schematically, offensively, things would change. You know, that zone running system that they have that's so successful. The one cut and go system developed obviously by Bobby Turner, one of the great offensive coaches, one of the great position coaches of all time, really a Hall of Fame position coach, who was in Denver with Mike Shanahan, has gone over to work with Kyle. I mean, getting him would be an absolute boon, but I can't really see that happening. But yeah, it would require a change schematically up front, certainly with a line, which I'm sure Chris will go into in a moment. But certainly a focus on those kind of one cut and go running backs, people like Breece Hall, Zach Charbonnet, et cetera, in the draft. To me, he's the number one candidate. I'm very intrigued by Mike McDaniel.
Chris, Mike McDaniel.
I think that he's sort of the anti-Joe Philbin in that, and as much as, you know, sort of what we've described as his role is that he's used to being not play caller, but, you know, coordinator and having, I mean, Joe Philbin was sort of a PowerPoint administrative guy on offense. Whereas Mike McDaniel is really a play designer, you know, and a playbook designer.
Joe Philbin,
you know?
Joe Philbin was a project manager and Mike McDaniel is an engineer.
Yeah, and he's a craftsman, really. I think that he's a little bit opposite Joe Philbin that way. He's also opposite Joe Philbin in another way, which is that to say that, you know, Joe Philbin attached himself to Aaron Rodgers and got a job because he was attached to Aaron Rodgers. Well, I mean, Mike McDaniel's background as a run game coordinator, think of all the good running games that we've seen out of the 49ers and how consistent they are that way. And we're talking about like who was doing that running, though. We're talking about Carlos Hyde, Matt Breida, Alfred Morris, Jeff Wilson, Raheem Mostert, the guys that, and this year, Elijah Mitchell. We're not talking. This isn't Terrell Davis. You know, these aren't Hall of Famers or something like that. So he's achieving, even though he's not had great players attached to him necessarily. And if you want to even get into the quarterbacks, we are talking about CJ Beathard and Nick Mullins, you know, in addition, and now this year, Trey Lance, in addition to Jimmy Garoppolo himself being a talented quarterback, but also many people regard him as a flawed quarterback. And I think a lot of people would say the exact same thing about Tua Tagovailoa. You know, he's a talented quarterback and he's very accurate, but some people regard him to be an impaired quarterback, like because he just doesn't have the physical ability. Well, that's Jimmy too. So if you're bringing Mike McDaniel in here, and he's got to make this work with Tua Tagovailoa, and you're not the biggest fan of Tua Tagovailoa, you would, you know, but you understand that they're going to probably go with him anyway because they don't have much a choice next year. Then you got to be a big fan of Mike McDaniels. But the other thing that I really like about him, and is you just nailed it, you talk about the offensive line. This is an area that the Dolphins are completely clueless on over the years. I mean, they cannot make a decision in any direction. They can't make good decisions about who to acquire. They can't make good decisions about how much to pay them. And they can't make decisions about who to keep, because they boot guys who end up playing well or end up playing better than the guys that they keep. Whether it's the draft, whether it's free agency, they keep screwing it up all over the place with the offensive line. And I think that Mike McDaniels not only changes the entire ethos on what kind of offensive line players that they see, because Miami has this history of just constantly going after these, you know, big stupid uglies who don't you know who don't play very smart and aren't very mobile, but they're big and very strong, or at least that's what they're here to be. Mike McDaniels, that system requires maneuverability, requires mobility, and so I think and it requires a lot of intelligence as well. That's why you see them going with veterans. You see them acquiring an Alex Mack, or you see them getting Trent Williams, or going with veterans under Kyle Shanahan this year on the offensive line. I think it changes the entire ethos of the offensive line acquisition. And that's a good thing, because this, whatever they're going for right now, it's bullshit. It's not working. And I also think it brings a cohesive vision to the offense too. And this is, I've talked about this in the past. This is what I want. I want somebody that brings a cohesive vision of how to incorporate run, pass, into play design, into personnel, priorities and all that. And we don't know that Mike McDaniel has a full grasp of all these things, but certainly his circumstances of where he's come from suggests that he does. So so this is a very strong candidate for Miami. Could he be a good leader of men, you know, based on his demeanor and stuff like that? I don't know that. I do think it is unfortunate that whoever comes in next is going to have a very tough job, because the defensive players all spoke up and were like, this is bullshit. We don't like that Brian Flores was fired. And so whoever's in there next has to win them over somehow. And you kind of wonder, does an egghead, you know, a bong hitting egghead, is that going to do it? Results always speak. So if they see the results, then yes, but that's going to be the challenge.
Yeah, and there's a video.
Hitting egghead. That should be the headline of the Miami Herald if he gets the job.
He should put that as a nameplate on his desk if he gets the job.
Yeah.
If he gets the job. There's a video on.
Obviously, we're just saying he looks like this. We're not saying he is. Yeah, allegedly. It's just in case his lawyers are listening.
Yeah, allegedly. There's a video on YouTube by Brian Baldinger. You know, we're all fans of his on this show. And he's talking about the genius, and he actually titled the video this, the genius of Mike McDaniel run game system, or his run system. First of all, it's a two count system. Okay. For people that know about football, when you say two count, you're talking about just two things. You're telling what the running back is going to do and what the offensive line is going to do. That's it. No else, nothing else. There's other teams that use four counts. Okay. Sometimes even use five counts to call a run play. Okay. But this video shows a game from the 49ers against the Pittsburgh Steelers and what they were doing to TJ Watt, okay? They kept using what they call influence blocks, which is essentially an offensive lineman or a tight end is going to fake as if he's going to block one way to try to influence the man in front of him to do one thing or the other. TJ Watt kept trying to get wide and they kept running inside of him. So Brian Baldinger shows how in the same game, TJ Watt keeps getting wide. They keep running inside of him. They keep gaining yardage. TJ Watt makes an adjustment. He decides, I'm going to crash down play after play after play. It took two plays and the 49ers started double teaming him and driving him into the ground and then running right over him. This is the type of guy I want coaching my team, a guy who is so detailed that he's going to pick up on one tendency from one player on the opposing team and use it to their advantage the entire game. I tend to like Mike McDaniel. I just like him. Ellen Moore.
I think more obviously Dallas Cowboys offensive coordinator. I think, you know, if Greg Zuerlein was more accurate, you know, he'd probably be the number one coaching prospect here because the Cowboys would probably be 14-2. What I love about Moore is that obviously he was a lefty. He is young. He's a very interesting play caller. I love his schemes. I love his spacing. I love the story this week that Dan Quinn conducted a mock interview with him ahead of his interview with the Jaguars, which says a lot about Dan Quinn as a personality, but it also speaks to the inexperience of Kellen Moore. I think he's going to have to blow the doors off to get the job solely because he's so young. I also don't think that his offense is particularly quarterback friendly, actually. You know, there's a heavy dosage of those pure passing concepts that I think require processing ability and taking advantage of what the defense provides, what the coverage provides. And I wonder, you know, in terms of, you know, it's a hire, I think, that looks really promising for a team with a solidified young quarterback to groom. And that might not be Miami. It might not be Jacksonville. It might not be Chicago in terms of Tua, Trevor and Justin. I don't know. Maybe that there are adjustments to make because maybe it's, you know, a mixture of his scheme and Mike McCarthy's scheme. But I suspect it's probably just a little bit too soon for Kellen Moore to be, you know, there's going to be players in the locker room that are going to be older than him. You know, and that's a bit different with Sean McVay, who was has always been a coaching maven. You know, Kellen Moore has obviously been a quarterback in the NFL more recently, probably than, you know, he'd care to remember. Whereas Sean McVay obviously has been on the coaching side of things for a lot longer. And therefore has been around players in terms of a responsibility position rather than a teammate position. So, yeah.
Yeah. Chris, your thoughts on Kellen Moore? My thoughts are very brief on Kellen Moore, and I'll go before Chris, if you'd mind. He's coming from a system where they don't lack in talent. Like, that team is absolutely loaded offensively. And I love Dak as a quarterback, by the way. I really do. I really do think that Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback and sometimes plays like a top 5 quarterback. So, you know, I'm always leery of that, especially the young guy who hasn't really, you know, has he really gone through any adversity? Like, it's all been rainbows and flowers since he got into as a coach. So, yeah, not ready yet is what I would say. Chris.
I think he's a good interview. I think, you know, it doesn't sound like he's ready yet. But I would, the thing you point out is, you know, again, it's like deciphering why this person's here. Why is this person there? Who was the last left-handed quarterback to play in the NFL before Tua Tagovailoa? It was Kellen Moore. and he's not only a left-handed quarterback, but he's a left-handed quarterback with a weak arm. So, a lot of people, you know, have criticisms of Tua Tagovailoa's arm strength, which is clearly below average for an NFL starter. So, you know, there's that, and maybe he could, you know, identify how to make things work there. That would be the hope, but I'm not sure that I see it myself. Like you said, I want to see him come under fire in a couple of different situations and then still succeed. And you know, maybe perhaps this is an interview that you keep in the back pocket for future years.
Yeah. Like 2026 or something like that when we go through this all over again. All right, I mentioned him before, but he's coming up now. Nathaniel Hackett. I guess the pro is Blake Bortles was a Pro Bowl quarterback under Nathaniel Hackett, and he had the number one run game in Jacksonville. He was also fired in Jacksonville. Now he's, you know, he's can't have a better situation than the one that he has right now in Green Bay. But it's, you know, we're back to that thing. Whoever stands next to Aaron Rodgers gets a job. Simon, your thoughts?
But, well, I'm not sure that's true. You know, look at the Packers were 24-23-1 in Rodgers' last 48 starts under Mike McCarthy prior to Matt LaFleur and Nathaniel Hackett arriving. They're now 39-9. Rodgers said he wanted to be coached and has been hard coached by LaFleur and by Nathaniel Hackett. Rodgers kicked up a fuss about Alex Van Pelt being removed at the back end of the Mike McCarthy era. He now, you know, he loves Nathaniel Hackett. You know, he said he isn't like the rest of them and speaks to about his energy. I think obviously you can, obviously a lot of the success is credited to Rodgers, but I don't just think it's a case of, look, just because somebody works with him, he's necessarily going to be a genius. But that offense is so rhythmic. It's so well designed. It's so well schemed. People are always running open, you know, and beyond Devontae Adams, the receivers are okay, but they're not, you know, Alan Lazard, Valdes-Scantling, they're not like, you know, yeah, we're not talking about top echelon NFL receivers. Doesn't really have a tight end, obviously, because Robert Tonyan's torn his ACL. The run game is really good.
Akiyari is making his made his debut this past week, so they with a backup left tackle.
I mean, they've been playing with their third string left tackle, really, because Josh Nyman backs up both Elgton Jenkins, who's out with a torn Achilles, and David Bakhtiari's coming back from the ACL. They've also lost Jenkins. They lost Josh Myers, who played very well, the second round center from Ohio State. So Billy Turner's been out. He's played really well at right tackle, right guard. I think Hackett's a very interesting name, but obviously has interviews, but hasn't yet. Luke Getsy is the other name at Green Bay. He's the quarterback's coach as well, who's another interesting name who might get an offensive coordinator gig before he gets a head coaching interview. But there are rumors that he might get an HC interview.
All right, Chris?
I'm uncomfortable just because, you know, I understand that I am impressed by the season that he got out of Blake Bortles. No shortage of being impressed there in Jacksonville. But I just get uncomfortable with this whenever you have this situation that's like, okay, who is it? You know, and who is it? Is it Aaron Rodgers? Is it Matt LaFleur, who's a head coach for a reason? You know, he is an offensive guy. This is what he is. And so you've got the offensive guy under the offensive guy attached to the Hall of Fame quarterback. And you're kind of like, and sitting next to the other guy who's getting a lot of attention, who's like, oh, is he the secret brains? You know, Luke Getsy, you know, who is it? And I get really uncomfortable with that. I do. I don't want to rule things out because of that, but it is conspicuous to me, and it wouldn't be my choice.
Yeah, it's also really interesting how, you know, Doug Marrone and Nathaniel Hackett are like the next big thing in the AFC as they take the Jaguars to the AFC Championship game. The following year, they start 3-8, and Doug Marrone not only fires several guys off the staff, but Nathaniel Hackett is fired, and everybody's standing, looking around saying, you're firing the guy that got that out of Blake Bortles and the number one rushing attack with Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette, quickly after Nathaniel Hackett got released, started asking for a trade, and everything went haywire in Jacksonville, which kind of, you know, bodes badly for Doug Marrone as a candidate. Although we've spoken about him before on this podcast. And you guys know that story. And if you've been on OnlyFans, you know it too well. And how come we haven't heard Doug Peterson's name? It almost makes way too much sense, but, you know, I don't think they would, we were talking off the air. I don't think that they would hide him, although he, you know, they don't have to announce or ask for an interview since he doesn't have a job. But how come we haven't heard his name? Like, is this just not going to happen? Like, he's just not a candidate?
Doug Peterson, is Doug Peterson on the list? I was told no. So he does make a lot of sense. I mean, I've always thought that that the theme of this this hiring cycle might be to getting a guy with experience, and as opposed to when you got to blow up the roster and start fresh, you know, sometimes you want, you might think about hiring the next Don Shula or the next Bill Belichick or some, you know, somebody that's a little bit green that could grow with the roster and, you know, grow with everybody. I think when they think they've put together a roster and now they want somebody to guide it to the Super Bowl. So I think that they could be looking for experience, and Doug Peterson has experience, but you know, a lot of people in Philadelphia are quite uncomfortable with Doug Peterson. Yes. For whatever reason. And I think that, he's also good friends with like Dan Marino and
plays golf with him.
Yeah. And sort of, you sort of wonder if there might be, I mean, sometimes you don't hire your friends.
Yeah.
Because you might have to fire your friends. And so I wonder if there's, you know, he's close enough with some people to not be on the list. And I am told that he's not. Now I think Alf, you've said before, he's not employed by anybody, so they could hire, or they could interview him in secret. You know, who knows? So maybe we wouldn't know that. I also don't see there's any reason to hide it. If you did interview him, certainly he would not want to hide it. Like he wants to get his name out there. So I just have been told no. So I don't see that happening.
Another popular name that everybody keeps bringing up is Jim Caldwell. But
yeah, and we've all been told no on that.
Yeah. It's like, it doesn't seem likely.
I've been told he's not really healthy enough, even though he says he is. He is 67 years old. The last time he was in the NFL was what, 2017?
Yeah.
And that's like in any capacity. I mean, he was with the Dolphins technically as a consultant in 2019, but I think that you know, we've seen that he didn't really have time to really do anything, so I don't think that counts. But you're that age. Some people seem to believe that you're of questionable health, and you also haven't even been in the NFL in any capacity in 5 years. No.
Yeah, and you said something interesting earlier about, you know, hiring the next Don Shula. The only guy that has like a parallel with Don Shula out of all of these candidates is Dan Quinn, because Don Shula was a defensive guy. Don right. Shula lost a Super Bowl with the Colts that everybody thought was an embarrassment. Dan Quinn did the same, losing a 28-3 lead in the fourth quarter. So those are the parallels. Those are the only parallels between Don Shula and any of these candidates is a guy who's failed before in a Super Bowl.
Failed head coaches. That's
yeah, you know. So I guess we'll finish up here. Have you ever taken a look at Nick Saban's staff from 2005 and 2006 here in Miami,
Chris? Oh yeah, it's incredible, right?
It's insane.
Like if you're thinking about not just the pro landscape but the college landscape,
yeah.
You know, the guys that they had here. I mean, they had Derek Dooley and Will Muschamp and they had Kirby Smart here. But they also had, you know, some other guys of pro fame. You know, I mentioned Richard's, he had Dan Quinn, you know,
yes.
Dan Quinn under him. He had Richard Smith. He had Mel Phillips and George Edwards. And,
yeah. George Edwards and Mel Phillips, by the way, if there were ever a Hall of Fame for assistant coaches, George Edwards will go in as a linebackers coach and Mel Phillips would go in as a DBs coach.
Yeah, and also Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan, and Hudson Hauk. You know, Hudson
it was Hauk, an all-star
at that time was like
and Mike Mularkey.
One of, if not the, I mean, that was, yeah, the next year he had Mike Mularkey. Hudson Hauk at the time was considered, you know, as much a premium name in offensive line as Dante Scarnecchia.
Yeah, and Keith Dom Armstrong Capers.
Dom Capers, you know, so I think that, this is quite the staff. And that's where I think a lot of people are starting to appreciate that now, like who can bring a staff with them and who can, and not just a staff that looks impressive right now. That's my final question.
Who can do it out of all these guys? Who has the connections? Who has the Rolodex?
I have to think that Dan Quinn has the advantage amongst all of them. And so, you know, you wonder if he's got the biggest advantage. I also kind of wonder about, and this is so Miami, you know, you've mentioned before, they've got all the assistants for another year. And so you wonder, if they've got all the assistants for the, are they going to try and like shove a lot of those assistants onto whoever comes next? Obviously if it's Dan Quinn, then you're not going to necessarily try and shove all of those defensive assistants on him. He's going to want to design things, but, I wonder about that. I can't say who is staying and who's going among Miami's assistants, but I can say that I don't know of anybody that plans on following Brian Flores to his next stop. And I know of a few that I'm told are not, are definitely not. You know, I can't say whether Josh Boyer is, for example, is going to stay in. But, you know, somebody on OnlyFans was pointing out that he might be, you know, he lives next to Josh Boyer, and he might be doing some things that suggest he doesn't plan on leaving anytime soon. You know, and so we'll see on that front. It wouldn't surprise me if they try. I mean, they've done that. Steve Ross has done that before. I mean, he's you know, hey, how do you feel about keeping this guy? How do you feel about keeping that guy? You know, he's done that during his hiring sessions, and I think that he might do the same thing this time.
Yeah, and I would say this: most of the defensive staff is under contract for another year. Obviously, they can get out since the head coach. I'm pretty certain that they all have a clause that gets them out of the contract if a head coach is fired. So you know, I'm pretty certain that if they want to leave, they can leave, especially for a promotion somewhere else. But I would try to keep Josh Boyer, Gerald Alexander, and Austin Clark. And that's the defensive backs coach, the DC, and the defensive line coach. Like, those guys have a very good reputation around the league. Obviously, the move, and I don't know what you think about this, and I guess we could close with this. The move, you know, kind of seems like should be bringing an offensive guy and trying to run it back with these guys on the defensive side of the ball. Just try to keep the best of Brian Flores around and try to improve what wasn't so good under Brian Flores. Like, that seems like the simple answer, doesn't it, Chris?
Ladies and gentlemen, what you just heard was actually a clip from January of 2007. you probably didn't know, but yes, that was yep. Alf. That was Alf 15 years ago. He sounded much younger then. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was the exact same thought process heading into 2007. You know, Nick Saban goes, you know, we've got a great defense under Dom Capers. What we need to do is we need to hire an offensive guy to just transform the offense and run it back with the defense and transform the offense. And, you know, we've even got the defensive guy already in Dom Capers. We don't need a new guy. So, you know, you could say Josh Boyer is going to be that guy here. And so we end up hiring, you know, a total dipshit, as a head coach. And, because he's, you know, he's going to transform the offense.
And wait, are you calling Cam Cameron a dipshit?
Yeah. And by the way, it was a dipshit who was associated with and riding the coattails of a Hall of Fame quarterback. Well,
yeah,
you know, don't we have some of that, that we've just talked about here? So I think that, you know, definition of insanity, but, we'll see. I mean, we'll see who proves to be the right candidate and who really interviews well and just impresses everybody.
Yeah. By the way, on OnlyFans, and you could get OnlyFans for $3 a month. If you want to see how you could get onto OnlyFans, go to our pinned tweet on our 3 Yards Per Carry Twitter page.
I mean, it's basically patreon.com/OnlyFans. It's not complicated.
Yeah. All right. We will talk to you again next week. I don't know if we'll have a head coach. I doubt it, since they're going to interview certain people toward the end of next week. But if news breaks, I guess we'll break in. But a programming note, from now on until draft season, we will have one show a week. We will try to, you know, plant that show in the middle of the week. to make it as convenient as possible. We will have reports from Senior Bowl week. We will have reports from free agency. And of course, we go back to two a week during draft season. But talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.